Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Derek.
And I'm Ray.
I'm Alex Reed.
Welcome back to another episode of...
Hello, everybody.
Hi, guys. Hi. Wow, where's the vim? Where's the energy?
All right, let me just move around for
you. Oh, thank you. Give me more spice.
I move away. You still move up next to me.
It's the magnetism.
1, 2, 1, 2.
It works.
It's fine.
How are you guys doing?
All right, guys, welcome to Mostly Lit.
I don't like the energy.
You don't like...
They're not loud enough.
Guys, we need to hear some energy from you. Come on, guys. Welcome to Mostly Lit. Woo! All right, cool. So I'm Alex Reeds.
I'm Ray.
And I'm Derek Owusu.
And Mostly Lit is basically a pop culture podcast which talks about books and pop culture and obviously and everything else around it.
Yep.
Try to meet the intersection in between. Am I missing anything else out on the description?
It's the... No, that's it, really.
Right.
I was going to add something else, but I was like, no.
It's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're Mostly Lit. We record and we put our episodes every week, every Monday. Make sure you check it out. And let's get started with the show.
Cool. We usually start with a section called What Are You Reading? And
wait, you're going to miss out on the How's Your Week?
Or the preamble, How's Your Week?
Oh, God. All right, yeah.
Not like, Alex, how's your week been?
Can I go last?
Okay, cool. Derek, how's your week been?
You know, I'm just actually, you know, I haven't been doing much, to be honest. I've been at home reading some great books, actually.
Yeah.
Watching some great movies. Started watching Lucifer, which is good.
Lucifer.
So you can watch Lucifer, but you don't want to watch the Sabrina show on Netflix.
Because Sabrina looks rubbish.
That is some,
okay. It's got nothing to do with the demonic. I can handle that stuff. The juju is nothing to me. It's fine. It's nothing to me. Like, people bang juju in ends. It's nothing. So at the end of the day, Sabrina looks... dead. It looks boring.
It's really good. I feel like you guys should give it a go.
I'm also used to like Sabrina the Teenage Witch, which is like very like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so this ain't it.
Taking it
at
in that direction is a bit for me. I don't know.
Well, I recommend all of you guys to go and watch it. I'm not sponsored by Netflix, but maybe I could be one day. Alex. Okay, fine. I'll tell my week then. My week's been great, actually.
Mm.
Work's been great. Mm. I even managed to go to cinema to watch Venom.
Oh.
I know.
You like it?
So I finally watched it. Here's the thing, I've been hearing a lot of talk. Venom, the plot, was shit.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I don't know if you guys know, but there's like this, you know, Tom Hardy looking fly, as he does. And then there's this like symbiote. And they come together. And it's a perfect match.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, he's supposed to be the bad guy in it. And as you know, bad guys go through change. Maybe there's something in them that might be redeemable. Well, yeah, he's presented as this thing that needs to be...
It's like anti-hero.
Is it the anti-hero thing? Yeah.
Well, he's a bad guy. and then, instead of you to know, like, to see closely, like, maybe how he turns good or the things that he thinks about and the things that trouble him... to reach this conclusion of, oh, actually, maybe Earth, I don't want to destroy Earth. He literally just says, oh, yeah, I've changed my mind. And I was like,
I mean, it'd be like that sometimes.
I know, but I literally, I was in the cinema and I was like, what?
I feel like you're asking too much of this.
You wanted to follow through with what you're saying.
It's literally just a brainless suit. I feel like you've really taken in all of the Marvel stuff.
It's not I don't know where you're Marvel. Universe,
yeah, so you're kind of like,
character development is not solely dependable, or it's you cannot only find character development in Marvel. There's loads of Marvel that isn't character development.
The Marvel Cinematic Universe are very good at doing that kind of
thing. But just because they're good at it doesn't mean other people can't take that on and do it as well.
Venom is a different kind of, Venom is just a fun movie. It's just fun.
So yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it is fun. It's hilarious. So that is one redeemable thing.
To any of the, I don't know about.
No, Marvel, but you should stay at the end because it says it's in association with Marvel. And you know, at the end of a movie in Marvel, you stay behind.
Yeah.
But when it said in association with Marvel, I was like, okay, so.
Did anything happen at the end?
Yeah. It
did. Oh, okay.
I just stayed in case.
Nothing that links it to the cinematic universe.
Yeah. Nothing. It has nothing.
Anyway.
But yeah, that's what I watched. And then I went to watch. I went to the theatre to watch this show called The Hose.
Okay. Okay.
And it was very traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recommend. But if you do go, just have your wits about you. And yeah, I had to go home and listen to Disney films because I was so traumatized.
You're not giving us anything.
Okay, so it's about... thing is, it's good for what it does, right? So it's about these three girls who go to Ibiza, and it's about their relationships, and it's about how they view love, how they view sex, how they view affection and their past traumas, and how they basically deal with that as young millennial women. And there's a particular character in there who is very, like, he's going for a lot. And she basically has tried to take her life, and you see her struggle with how she deals with that, like, in your face.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so much that they balance it off with this humor that, like, you can't even process the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
It just goes from, oh, and then, oh, but let's have sex. And I'm just like, I've never watched, it's so good. It's so powerful. And I really commend the writers for what they've done. But I've never watched something, I love to watch shit that makes me cry and makes me lose my mind. But I've never watched something that made me want to get up and leave because it was so uncomfortable.
That means I feel like that means it's just powerful.
That means it's good.
There is good, but there must also, I guess, be an element of art. Like, there is good.
I feel like
it's not good.
No, but I feel like you're basically now saying that art has to have limits. It needs to tell the truth, but not too much truth.
It needs to make everybody feel comfortable in
that.
That's life. That's how it works.
Why must I watch something that makes me want to get up?
You don't. So you can get up and leave.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I'm like, for me anyway, like, for you, maybe you would have liked it, right? I didn't like it.
And to tell people not to go and watch it because it's...
Yeah, but then I give recommendations all the time. So I'll tell you, don't go to this restaurant because the food is rubbish.
That's not a recommendation.
That's a recommendation.
That's not
imparting your opinion on somebody else.
Yeah, that is a recommendation. I said I would recommend you not go to that restaurant because the food is rubbish. And therefore, I would recommend you to go to this because if you must see it, cool. It's art. Right. If you go, have your wits about
you. I'd say go.
You could just say, would you recommend
your own opinion?
I wouldn't recommend it.
But go on. No, you say, don't go and watch it.
Yeah, that's what I said. There's a difference
between saying, don't go and watch it, and I wouldn't recommend it, but tell you go watch it.
Well, personally, I really feel for you guys.
So you were just traumatizing you in your feeling.
I literally had to walk out and stand to the corner, and my friend was like, just lay it out. And I was like,
in the street.
Whole street. That's what I'm saying. It was just a lot, like...
Anyway, Alex,
my week was pretty much spent watching that Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
See?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, there's a bit in there with the whole exorcism, and it moves completely crazy. I don't know. There's a whole lot of praise Satans in there, and, you know, the false god and the underworld, and it just makes... It moves crazy.
I love that.
I don't know what it is.
Something that keeps
telling me this is...
It's because the devil moves you, Alex. That's why.
All right, so moving on. that's what I've been basically doing this week.
Yeah.
And just writing. I'm just trying to keep up with...
What are you reading? Let's start with you. What am I reading?
I'm reading several things, but Mitch Albom's got a new book. So he wrote The Five People You Meet in Heaven.
You love Mitch.
I actually love his books.
Yeah.
I've got that book.
Yeah, which one?
That book.
The Five People You Meet in Heaven.
I think you gave it to me.
I probably did. Five People You Meet in Heaven. Mm. He's got a sequel called The Next Person You Meet in Heaven. Oh, okay. It kind of tells one of the stories of.
I think
one
he's
of the,
doing that just for money.
One of the girls.
Like that, like Alchemist 2.
Probably. Yeah. But it's not.
Alchemist
but it's,
2?
No, there's not enough.
Oh, but thank God.
But it's beautifully written. And
yeah,
I mean, I'm only at the top of it.
Yeah.
But it's a very comfortable read. And it's very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Then I'm reading this book called The Silent Guides by Steve Rogers. He wrote The Chimp Paradox. And it's basically
That's trying to psychology, isn't it?
Yeah, he's trying to get you to undo all of the things that that you've kind of learned from childhood, and trying to figure out the way that you think, and then so you can kind of process adulthood, I guess, and also impart that knowledge onto your children, if you are parents and the such. But it's triggering, but it's cool. Like, just I've just been sitting in, I've literally been sitting in my room watching that devil shit, and reading about psychology and stuff. But yeah, that's what I've been doing. That's what I've been reading.
Nice.
What are you guys reading?
I started reading Liquidation because I thought that was the book that we were doing today. Turns out it's not.
Amazing.
Lost in the Ether.
And I love the writing, and I love how it goes from prose to play, even though prose to dialogue, essentially. I love that transition. Mm. Also, it's just a bit bleak. And you know me, I just don't like bleak shit because I'm like, why? I can just live life if I want to know bleak stuff, right? I don't have to read.
It is life.
Life doesn't have to be bleak.
No.
You can't live your life avoiding the bleak. That's why you...
I'm not saying I'm... No, but I'm... In reading, I'm reading something... I'm like living something else. I can live my life and see bleakness and interact with it. Mm. But when I'm reading, this is something that I actively choose to do.
Mm.
So sometimes I'm not in the mood to read people's depression and rubbish shit about how shit life is.
Mm.
Sometimes I want something that uplifts me. And I think... Liquidation isn't something that is uplifting.
Have you finished it?
No.
Okay.
What else am I reading? Oh, I'm still carrying on with Alexis Arthur's How to Love a Jamaican.
How do you love a Jamaican? Have you figured it out yet?
I've been loving Jamaicans, you know. So I love you.
You love Nigerians. Stop lying.
First of all, why do you have tell people my business like that? I love everyone because... My love doesn't have no cats, no cats and stuff.
Okay.
But yeah, so those are the two things that I'm reading.
All right, cool.
What are you reading, Derek?
I'm dipping into a couple of books. I'm dipping into a book called The Naked and the Dead by Norman Mailer. Dipping into that because I realized I haven't really read any kind of like post-war novels except for like Jean Paul Sartre. I haven't really read anything, so I'm reading that, and I'm gonna read Birdsong after that. I know you love that book.
Yeah.
And I'm also dipping into, oh my God, what's it called? I can't remember. A Hungarian author. He's Swedish. He's a filmmaker. I can't remember his name. But he's written books basically about his family growing up. But it's set out like a play.
Mm.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a novel, but it's set out like a play. But it's.
Why are you reading Hungarian authors?
Because you know what I realized? Like, you know, I always get insulted for reading dead white males. How you love dead white? But in my mind, dead white male means dead white English, American, perhaps maybe Russian authors.
Why? What's the difference between that and like a Hungarian author?
They're not as well known. They're not as widely read. So if you're saying read diversity, that means they should be included in that because they're not widely read.
Diversity to you doesn't mean
diversity to me doesn't just mean black. It means people who are not widely read. So it means Icelandic, like Hanador Laxness.
So you have found a loophole, like, Derek.
Liquidation. It's not a loophole.
You've sidestepped.
It's not a loophole. But look, think about it. Have you ever read an author who's from, let's say, for example, Kosovo or something? You
have. It's the Tractor book.
That's from Ukraine. He's from Ukraine.
Okay, my bad.
Do you know what I mean? So I thought like, yeah, reading diversely to me means reading outside of the normal literary canon, outside of Dickens, Tolstoy, all these
things. What are you getting from that in terms of what are the narratives that are prevalent from people?
I get to see let's see a book called Fish Can Sing by Halldór Laxness. He's Icelandic, right?
By who, sorry?
Halldór Laxness. So basically,
it's a really hot name,
isn't it? The book is Laxness.
Halldór.
It's basically like he's telling the story about, you know, he's a young boy, and it's about his cousin who's become, well, not his cousin, a girl who becomes a singer. She leaves Iceland. But basically, what's important, well, what I liked about the book is the daily life of what it was like in Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
About, you know, the fish, the selling of the fish, the people, the lodges in his house, the characters, the kind of people that they are, the kind of rituals that they go through. There's one guy who dresses up in, you know, his army uniform every single day. Not every day, but on a particular day. Do you know what I mean? It's the characterizations and me realizing that I don't know anybody from Iceland. I haven't met anybody from Hungary before. Do you know what I mean? So reading these stories, to me, is reading diversely. It's not just let's get some, you know, African American authors in there, and I'm reading that. I don't think that's reading diversely.
It's like what I said to you about reading. I've never read anything from Australia, and I was reading that.
Yeah.
That book.
And then I found an author for you to read. I can't remember his name, but he wrote a book. It won the Man Booker Prize. It's called Oscar and Lucinda. Oscar and Lucinda.
The book's called Oscar and Lucinda.
Yeah. He's from Australia. Peter Carey.
I don't really. There's something when I read books in translation that I always realise I'm missing. Like something about translated books that I'll read it and there'll always be this gap. And I feel like the gap is the things that are lost in translation. So I find it really hard to connect because I'm like, oh, there's just something there.
How do you know?
I know. How I'm somebody know? That has, like, I know a different language, so I know.
That doesn't.
No, I know. So like if I tell like you
proverbs,
I know, then I know, innit?
Like proverbs.
Not even proverbs. Like it's like there's some things that I'm reading and I'm like, actually, maybe there's something missing.
I feel like that's
here.
A bit, I personally feel like that's like a snob. I'm not saying
it's not snobby.
I think it's a snob.
I am a snob, but it's not
it's
snobby.
Like you get those donuts, you're like, oh, you have to read Dante in Italian.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that you have to read it in their language. I'm saying that I recognize that there is something, there is a gap. And I'm not saying that it makes a book bad. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that there is a gap there that I know could be filled with me knowing the language.
Perhaps.
And if I know the language, I think there'll be some sort of magic.
Though, what if translating it into English adds something to it rather than subtracts?
I don't know if that's always the case. Do you know a different language?
No.
Can you speak a different language?
No, I can't speak
a different language. Okay, well, it's never been there's something missing. There's something that needs to be added. Mm-hmm. It's always been there's something missing, or even not even missing, but just like the breadth of something. So I'll say a word in like Swahili and I'll say it. And I'll try and mimic the word in English. Difficult. And it's either it's too large or it's too small.
Yeah. I don't know.
It doesn't quite make it perfect,
so
right?
I did a few modules on that. You have to translate the stuff.
Mm. But you can't.
And you do have to take a lot of meaning and shift the meaning.
Yeah, you have to shift it all around.
But you shouldn't really concern yourself with that.
I don't know,
but I just always feel the gap. I mean, if you guys don't feel the gap, that's your own personal problem.
I feel it.
Anyway, let's move on.
But yes, so those are the books we're reading this week. Take it away.
So today we're talking about a short story written by Zadie Smith, which is first featured in The New Yorker, isn't it? She's
got it in her book Feel Free.
Feel Free as well, yes. It's in Feel Free. She takes on the persona of Billie Holiday. And basically, it's kind of just like an internal monologue, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
She's talking about Billie Holiday, where she's going through what people want from her, people take from her.
We all know who Billie Holiday is, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, let's not insult the audience, Alex.
No, I'm just saying. Somebody might be like, who's
that? Okay, yeah. Yes, so African-American singer, of course. Okay. And she talks about Strange Fruit and what it's like to perform that and kind of men she meets, the people she meets, and the kind of questions that people ask her when they meet her. And I personally, at the beginning as well, it's kind of like she talks about different Billie Holiday. She talks about Miss Holiday and then Billie Holiday and then
Lady Day.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's kind of like, wow, I started just thinking that, okay, you know, because when we meet authors and we interview them, we always ask them the same banal questions, probably because we think we can't get too personal with them.
Yeah.
You know? But the way, obviously, Zadie Smith, and she's written it so well that I'm talking about it as if to say, Billie Holiday actually wrote this.
Do you think it was written really well?
I was actually kind of like, so I'm talking about, I'm like, I need to keep remembering that Billie Holiday didn't write this.
I was thinking, like, is this an extract from her autobiography? Yeah. Then I was like, yeah. Zadie Smith wrote this, so how is it short? I was confused. But yeah, I get what you're saying. You didn't think that it was well written? You didn't think it was well written?
Okay.
Oh my God.
So I thought it was wonderful. And at the end, I was like, is that it? I want more. But I don't think... So this is actually the first Zadie Smith I've read, mainly because I refuse to read Zadie Smith because there's always this like...
You refuse?
You need to get off of this.
I don't even refuse.
You're actually missing out.
Okay, that's cool. Like, I don't think I am, but okay. It's not even that. It's more so there is... You know when an author is so well talked about, so well publicized, but not in a light-hearted way. So every time I hear Zadie Smith, I know that the topic is going to be quite heavy. It's going to be quite dense. Yeah. And I'm not even... It might not be, but that's what I see. That's how it's publicized. She's a very serious person, right? And so every time I'm like, it's a Zadie Smith book, it's like, And that, I'm just like,
oh, you should actually read White Teeth. It's so funny. It's hilarious.
On YouTube.
So I tried to read Swing Time.
That's more serious than White Teeth.
Yeah.
I tried. Mm. And before I was like, the cover's so pretty. And then at the end, I'm like, why is it so yellow? it was just too much. And so I put it down because I literally didn't even get 10 pages in. And so there's always been this heaviness with Zadie Smith. So when I read this, I went into it like, it's going to be some deep shit. You know, I just woke up. I'm tired. I want to watch Grey's Anatomy. Mm. Cool. Which isn't actually, it's quite still deep as well. So I read it and I liked the way she writes. It's very, you know, it has a pace to it, it has a rhythm. But
she doesn't write like that normally, you know. She wrote like that to imitate Billie Holiday's, the way she speaks, yeah, the cadences and stuff.
But
like that.
I do think I felt that. Mm. And I felt that it was very contrived. And I don't know whether I like how, as in, I'm sure she reread, she did this and she tried to get in the mind of someone. I'm just like, bitch, just write. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And so because it was so contrived, I found it very hard to be lost in it. Mm. Like there was a part when she talks about in the short story, she's like, oh, you know, and I'm the type of lady that children love. And I don't even try. Children just love me when I'm in the mood. And I'm like,
I mean, that's not what she said.
Okay, well, the gist. And, you know, she's somebody that is able to sit down with a child and bust joke and shit, you know. And nobody else really does that with children. And I was just like, first of all, how the hell did we get to this section? Because it was so random. And you know it was random. Tell me how that led to that.
Can I break it down for you?
As he said, so he was breaking down the different sections of
And then like, oh, no, no. But it was so like, I know I wasn't lost in it because she was like, yeah, men love me and I don't even know why they do.
Come on.
I will read it to you. Basically, guys.
You are really...
No, guys. Okay, first of all, you can have your time, but let me have mine. So,
let her land.
She, like, you know, I'm not saying it word for word, but she basically said, you know, I have this thing, men just love me, I don't even know why, and which is to the point where lovers come in and out, and then I have like male friends, you know the chicks that I don't have girlfriends, and I'm just like, that's because you're wayward, so something about you. So when I was reading this, and when I was reading this and she was like, yeah, I don't really have girlfriends. Well, she was like, I have a lot of male friends so that when, you know, this guy cheats on me and stuff and, oh, I only have my cat in my, no, a dog in my life. Only dogs are like loyal creatures.
That's not,
you know, and I have to interrupt. Get over yourself.
Firstly.
Please explain the story.
That whole section where she's talking about guys, so like, that was elemental. She wasn't trying to, you know, exalt herself. That's the first thing. Secondly, when she's like, she doesn't have many women friends, she says because she's no longer in that world anymore. Do you understand? So basically her
world?
The world where ordinary women, she's now Billie Holiday. So she's in a...
And I'm right for a freak and I still have girlfriends?
No, man. For goodness sake, right? let me land anyway. And basically what she says is that, okay, she has male friends who are basically like girlfriends. And obviously what she's trying to say in...
She's around men a lot more than women.
No, she's basically trying... In my personal opinion, she's trying to say she's around gay men.
Really? I didn't get that.
That's what she's trying to say.
I thought these men want to sleep with her, but they can't because she has this, oh, we're just friends thing.
No, that's not what she's saying. I think she's saying she's around gay men.
Okay.
I never got that.
I
definitely think that. Read it again. That's what she's trying to say. Mm. Do you understand? I don't think she's trying to say that the men around her are trying to sleep with her.
I definitely do.
I felt like it was just more like she needed that. She felt comfortable around a lot of men just because based on... I don't even, like, have you read...
Lady Sings the Blues.
Yeah.
I've read half of it.
And the kind of experiences, the experience she had growing up, etc. Yeah. She felt comfortable with men rather than women because, like, women weren't necessarily kind to her.
And let's also not forget she's bisexual.
Yeah.
Also, what I did feel about this was that there was this contradiction between how contrived and controlled the writing was, but then the character was not in control at all. It was more so like she was talking about, it was very hazy. In terms of, there are men downstairs and they're going to take me to go and perform. But I don't know. I always arrive on time, but I'm not really... They're just there. I don't know who the guy is that tells them to take me there. Yeah. Oh, I somebody was trying to...
We're literally missing out on such an important part of where she's talking about the guys downstairs.
Okay,
she's basically saying that those guys have a stake in her finances.
Yeah, but down I'm not missing it. I know that. They're trying to negotiate.
But you're basically saying, oh, I've got a man downstairs waiting for me.
No, but it's not that. It's like there are these men who are basically in control of her life and she has absolutely no control of it. Like, the only thing that possibly loves her is her dog. Essentially,
look at the time she was great.
No, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that there was that contradiction. I liked the fact that the language was so contrived.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't like that she was not in control, but it was a good symbiosis. Yeah, and I don't know, it was just a bit, I mean, it was okay. I can't say I loved it.
Mm. Did you go into the? But you went into this thinking, oh, Zadie Smith.
So therefore you already had a prejudice.
You already started on the wrong.
Yeah, but who doesn't? Do you go into every novel being like, this is really Derek? Oh.
might be my doctor.
Put it on screen.
Yeah, go on.
Well, that's really accurate description of what happens in our podcast.
Yeah.
but yeah, like there's this like symbiosis that I quite liked.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't like incredible. Like it was.
Oh my God, I was going to mention something. It'll come back to me.
Yes.
You forgot it.
Yeah.
Do you know what that means? So basically, it means that whatever you were going to say, it was a lie.
It actually wasn't.
It was.
Do you know what I really liked about it is when she started talking about strange fruit and how when she's, you know, giving a performance, everybody throws out their requests and says, I want you to sing this, sing that, as if to say, her singing those songs takes nothing out of her emotionally.
Okay.
So she was just like, I feel like a jukebox, but I wrote these songs. Like, nobody asked me about what it was like when I wrote these songs or when I performed them, and suddenly I hit a note that I've never hit before, and I hit it out of nowhere and I know it. But do you know what I mean? Those details. So it really started making me think that, you know, when we go to concerts and stuff, when I've gone to concerts, I've never really seen people throwing out requests like that. They usually just do what they're doing. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, it's interesting that we really feel like
we're entitled to.
When she said, I feel like a jukebox, it's kind of like we really do commodify artists, musicians, you know, especially, I have to bring this up, the way the Beyhive move with Beyonce is so mad. It's like, you belong to us. You need to drop an album now. You need to do this now. Blah, blah, like, Beyonce's forgiven her husband. Now, babe, you can't be forgiven Jay-Z because we don't forgive him. Like, it's so nuts that people think that they have complete control over these people.
I think it's different, though, in the context that we're talking about. If they are going up to her and saying, oh, sing this song, sing this song, where it's taking the control away from her as an artist.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Of course it is.
Can I just say something?
Go ahead, go ahead.
Let me just get this clear. So what you're saying is the Beehive... the Beehive feel like they have a stake in Beyonce. Is that what you're saying?
The way they talk is like they own her.
They own her.
Yes.
Okay. So let me tell you about the Beehive.
Go ahead.
First of all, Beyonce don't give a shit about us. Okay. Beyonce doesn't care about us. Please let me land. I just felt like you were gonna talk, and I just had to simmer you down.
I'm just serious.
And most of the times we're just really frustrated because we want music, right? Because we like her stuff and we want music. But Beyonce will do things in her own time. And we will get a notification that she's posted something on Instagram. And the first thing we'll say is, oh, this bitch. Okay. And because we know that she does things in her own time. And we are not like the Barbs or the Carbs or the Navy or whatever, like some Swifters, I don't know, the crazy demonic people.
Wow.
We do not demand of Beyonce. I just want to tell you that.
Thank you.
Okay.
No,
I'm not done yet. We never.
You actually opened the cage.
No. Like, not in no cage. This is just a personal, this is like a public announcement. If you thought, you know, we do not demand of Beyonce. Beyonce does whatever she wants. Beyonce, we are in a real, like, you know, one-sided relationship with Beyonce.
I feel like you're a tame Beyonce fan compared to the ones that I see on TikTok.
No, so this is it. People, we are all the same. We are all, we've read our manifesto.
No,
please.
Definitely.
We have a manifesto.
You're
forgetting
that Ray is the European head of the segment.
Emea.
Was it
Head of Emea.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I'm saying is, the people, when we do nothing, we are just like you come for us, we come for you. But don't be mad because our energy is more than yours. So, like, but if you don't come for us, we're peaceful people. We just want to sit down and enjoy our music. We don't want to come for nobody. This is why this whole Barbs and Carbs, Nicki Minaj and Cardi, we just sit here like, our fave will never. Because we know that's not what we're about.
But do you not
feel... So we do not own Beyonce. Beyonce does not own us. Mm-hmm. We are just victims in all of this,
but
really.
But the thing is, Ray, when you're really out here... When you're really actually saying, I know you said Beyonce doesn't care about us.
But she doesn't.
But of course she sees what people say online.
I think she has a private account or something.
Of course she sees all of this stuff, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, you know when people were on Frank Ocean, Frank, where's the album, Frank? And I remember seeing a tweet and someone was like, why do fans feel so entitled that they can be demanding?
Is it entitlement?
Like, of course.
Because we just want music.
Exactly, because you think they're jukeboxes. You feel like,
no,
that's what it is.
No, it's not a jukebox. It's more so you're a very talented human being. And I would really love to, you know, it's like when my favorite author like hasn't released a book. I'm like, man, I'll be so excited if a book comes out. And if it comes out, I'm gonna pre-order that.
But then why don't you just shut your mouth and wait for it?
But why do I? No, but why shouldn't I not talk?
Because what do you mean, why should you not
talk? As in, you're telling me shut your mouth and wait for the album.
Yeah, wait
but
for the album.
I have a voice. The thing is, I can talk. Beyonce can listen or not. She doesn't give a shit.
It doesn't. It's not she can listen or not. What you've said, whether she's listening or not, she's heard it. And it will affect her in a way you may not even know.
Yeah, but do you understand? It probably will.
It's not about you can listen or not. It's like you saying to someone, oh, you're
no,
this, you're that, you're
that.
No,
but to be honest, I just feel like that's with anything you go through in life. I don't think it's an entitlement. An entitlement will be like,
so
if she doesn't release an album, then something, I'm going to do something to her.
That's not entitlement. That's a threat.
I feel like that's a... That's okay. I feel like that's entitlement.
Okay, so what about... So how much of it do you think takes from the artist with regards to what we're talking about with Billie Holiday and stuff? Yeah. Because obviously if they're commanding that she, or demanding that she's seeing Strange Fruit, which is quite a painful song, and like, you know, she's just as they just commodify the artist to kind of just make these. How much do you think? How can we change as consumers? For example,
I think
of
with
the music,
with jazz is different.
With them, it was racist though as well.
Yeah,
racism.
It was, but then also jazz is different. There's a lot of emotional labor that goes into constructing a jazz rhythm, jazz tune.
Really?
You know what I mean? Of course, of course there are. Yeah.
How would you mean? Of course.
Like, so in terms of the way someone's playing the sax.
But isn't that just like a song?
No.
Any song?
No.
But what's the difference?
Oh, we'll talk after.
No, just tell me now. Like, what's the difference?
The difference is, one, how they're singing it, why they're singing it, where they're singing it, to who they're singing it.
But isn't that like every type of music?
No, it's not, because you can make a brainless pop song that you can sing five times a week. Mm-hmm. But listening to Strange Fruit, of course you can't sing that five times. Because it's really emotive. What she's talking about is real life. It's political. You know what I mean? It's emotionally draining to sing it in a way where people will relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand? That's the difference between particular artists as well. They sing certain songs in a particular...
These conscious singers?
Not conscious. When Kanye West was singing Dear Mama after his mom died, completely different performance to when he sang on the album. Why? Because the situation was different. The emotion he put into it was completely different. So the song became different. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Does Beyonce ever sing Sandcastles live?
She did it once when she was pregnant.
So she would, and she hasn't sung it?
I haven't heard it, actually.
Yeah, and that kind of says something. Then.
Maybe.
Because that was
quite... Yeah, that's quite...
That's an emotional song. She's not... But if people keep demanding that she sang
that... But nobody will demand that, because it's not the age where she's, like, in a bloody restaurant performing at a club. And we're like, B, please play... She's...
You don't even
see her.
Yeah, I think it's because we're in superstardom.
Yeah.
But yeah, it did make me think, oh, I wonder what albums I've listened to where the artist has put... Like, some albums are just all emotional. They're all emotionally charged. But then you think, I thought, which song has really kind of taken a lot out of the artist, you know, for them to put that song together, arranging the instruments, you know, do you know what I mean? The lyrics, the everything. I remember watching Jermaine Dupri talk about Usher when he was doing, when he put together Confessions. And it was like, when he performed Burn, he stripped completely naked and got in the booth and performed Burn. And he was just yo, seriously, that's what Dupri said. That's what he said, do you know what I mean? So it's kind of like, wow, so to
Burn.
Yeah, Burn.
That was a powerful song.
Oh, it's a powerful song, Ray. Come on.
It's a powerful song.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, so I was thinking to literally have to like, for example, if it's traumatic, to relive your trauma every single time you perform that tune. It's a bit mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really? Do you know what I mean?
And demand that of you. It's like, so you can kind of put the same to like poets.
Yes,
you could. Spoken word poets. And obviously, you know, they're putting a lot. They're putting a lot out there and are putting a lot on the line, for example. Mm. So it's going to be different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spoken word poetry is something that is just very topsy-turvy for me. I don't think I could ever get used to it properly.
Why?
Because
you're a snob?
No.
Why don't you like spoken word?
I don't know the correlation.
Because it's usually people who are really into, let's say, for example, Byron or, you know, Percy Bysshe Shelley, these kind of poets. No, they're like, I don't like spoken word poetry. It all sounds the same to me.
Yeah.
No, that's not it.
Does it all sound the same to you?
No. It's more so I get secondhand embarrassment if they fuck up. And so, like, every time I'm watching spoken word poetry, I'm thinking this guy's going to mess up.
Mean?
Like, they're going to forget their words and they're like, oh, sorry. Or they like still for a bit to remember. And I get a lot of secondhand embarrassment. And so every time I'm watching it, I'm thinking, please don't mess up.
Why not just take your time?
All the crowds that I've been
because
in,
it's embarrassing.
They've usually supported the artist.
Yeah, because it's embarrassing, isn't it? They have to. You've got this! And I'm just like... No, inside I'm like, yeah, you've got this, but really, I would hate to be you in this time, do you know what I mean? So that's the one thing that I'm like... apprehensive about spoken word poetry. It's just like, oh man, if you mess up, it's peak for you, innit?
Yeah, that's fair.
So yeah, not a snob.
Of course not.
Anyway, guys, I would suggest you guys go and read that. It's on the New Yorker.
It's on the New Yorker. It's by Zadie Smith.
But it's also in her book, Feel Free. So go and
check there's an audio version as well, isn't there?
So the bit, so on the New Yorker, there's the audio bit that's played. So you just play the audio, you can just listen to it as you read or listen to it while you're doing what you're doing.
Cool. Fantastic. Alrighty. Okay, let's get some of my favourite time now, Gaia.
What's that? Mostly Flicks?
Alright, guys, got Mostly Flicks, but it's not just a normal Mostly Flicks. It's a Mostly Flicks.
Where are you going?
Because I'm like, I'm really excited about this.
No, so...
watching
too much Yay, bro. Yeah. My Yay is different to
your Yay.
Anyway, let's move on.
Okay, so Mostly Flicks, this episode, guys, we are discussing Get Out. Cool. Hands up, who's seen it?
Oh, wow.
Hands up if you haven't. Wow. Well, you're going to see clips of it now.
Spoilers.
So we all watched it, and I watched it again this morning. But just before we kind of dissect, just a general, like, how did you find the film? Derek?
Okay, let's do this quick.
Quick.
I thought the film was overrated.
Overrated.
I thought it was overrated. I feel like people were really imposing meaning on things that it's just kind of like, oh God, come on. Like, this is so obvious and you're going on like, you have to be some, you know. It's like Rick and Morty fans. They act like, oh my God, there's so many hidden messages in the cartoon or something. Do you know what I mean? I thought it was really, really...
So you didn't enjoy it?
I mean, I enjoyed it, yeah. I enjoyed the experience of watching it with a lot of people in the cinema.
Yeah.
That's what, enriched the experience for me. But right. I think if I was watching it at home by myself... I'll just be like, okay, it's all right.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Mm. Alex, how did you find Get Out?
I thought Get Out was a trip.
Mm. Okay.
It had me on edge for a better part of, 3 days after watching it. I guess the best time to watch it is when you're in a group of people, like in a cinema setting. I mean, I do think it was well written.
Yeah.
And I do think there were some brilliant actors in there, really good acting, and it does bring together a lot of serious points about race in America.
Yeah.
And like for today as well, especially in 2018, interracial relationships, liberalism,
police brutality,
all these different things. I think there is a lot to dissect in the film. I don't think there were too many. I think he put those in intentionally. It's not like he was trying to like be subtle with it. Like if it's explicit, it's explicit. And that's it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites.
So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah.
It was scary as hell.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it, and there was definite scary moments. I loved watching it in a group because obviously the racial tension in the film can be really seen in the cinema. So like when there are like some funny parts and you see maybe a white person laughing and you're like or like something happens, and obviously at the end there is that police scene and man's just, you know, stab this woman, and then you just hear the police and the whole cinema just groan. They were like, oh man.
Yeah.
And it's just something as simple as that will make you really, it really illustrates just the state of the world.
Everybody was emotionally connected to the film in some way or another. That's like there's no way to kind
of. And Daniel Collier's American accent wasn't too bad, actually.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, I was very convinced.
Yeah.
And that girl, Rose, she's a monster. So, what we're going to do is we are going to play you guys a few clips that we will discuss, and please feel free to talk about it. Don't be shy. Otherwise, we will pick on you guys. So please, like, you know, offer yourselves up.
Get involved.
Get involved, and it's going to be a fun discussion. So can we please have the first clip, please?
Good to see another brother around here. Yes, of course it is. Something wrong?
There you are. Is there something amiss?
Yes, yes.
Oh, hello. I'm Philomena, and you are?
Chris, Rose's boyfriend.
Fantastic. You two make a lovely couple.
Thanks. Oh, where are my manners? Logan King. Chris was just telling me how he felt much more comfortable with my being here.
That's nice. Logan, I hate to tear you away, dear, but the Wincotts were asking about you.
Well, it was nice to meet you, Chris. Goodbye.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, so I think we all recognize that scene as something that was hella crazy.
I want to ask the audience question about kind of like black expectation. For example, when you go to a party or you're at work or something, and
just thinking that
another black person that you expect them to be down. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And then they're not down.
Oh,
Do you know
this
what I mean?
Is very pertinent.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask, has anybody ever experienced that? And if you have, how did you kind of work around it, I guess?
And we have a roving mic as well. So even though you won't hear it, it's going to pick it up for our recording.
Should we go first? Or do you want to?
No, audience.
I think audience. Yeah, all right. Do you guys, have you guys ever experienced another black person in the office who hasn't been with it?
Or conversely, have you ever been a white person and you've gone up to another white person and they've started acting a different way than you expected?
True. Equal opportunities.
You know what I mean?
Perfect. Do you want to stand up so we can see you? Sorry.
Hi.
Hello.
So recently at my workplace, they've employed a lot of black women. So last year, I was like 1 in 3. And this year, they've employed about 6 more.
Ooh.
I went to the bathroom one day, went into the toilet, and they were all just in the toilet. And I went, oh, look, all the black girls go to the toilet at the same time. Just as a joke. Just as a joke. And then they just all turned and looked at me, and I was just like, okay, so I'm just going to go use the toilet, I'll see you guys later. But I find it kind of weird, because sometimes when you get into a workplace, you kind of look for that black person to connect with, but at the same time, we all subconsciously know not to do it too much,
because
we don't want to look like we're finding each other. So even like when we go to the pub, I end up like with black people, but not intentionally.
Yeah.
It just happens to be, you have more in common. Someone might come over from my department and say, oh, why are you guys all standing
here? I've got that.
You know, is this like the black people club or standing together? And it's just like, I'm sorry, but I haven't really got anything in common with you. So when we're sat there talking, I don't feel like I'm engaged or can say much. So this is why, and I don't do it intentionally, honestly. And it's not to say that I don't have things in common with white people. It's just the type of people that I work with. They're very middle class, all from like private school, etc. So when they talk about things, I'm just like,
Can I respond to you? Do you not feel like maybe you're limiting your ability to relate to other people by thinking like that? Do you not think that because you subconsciously think, I've got nothing in common with these people, do you know what I mean? Not even to be all kumbaya-ish, but at the same time, I can read a novel about somebody who's, you know, middle class in Russia and relate to them in certain ways. They might go through some things and I'm just kind of like, yeah, I know how you feel. So I could have a conversation with that person if I ever met them, because I know that they, do you know what I mean? There is kind of like a shared humanity when it comes to certain things. That's not to say that race isn't important, it is, but it's underlying things. So I think that sometimes, me personally as well, when I'm at work and stuff like that, I subconsciously think, I'm just not going to have anything in common with these people. And I've never had a conversation with them. And then one person surprises me. The person I'm supposed to have the least in common with becomes my dog. You know, that becomes my friend. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know what you mean, but in my workplace, it's just really different because all the young people are black.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's age is a, you know, big feature of that as well. So when I'm talking to people, they're really old and they do it as well when they start talking about things that I just don't know about.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily race. There's other factors that play on that as well.
Yeah.
It's also age. It can be area, etc. So I'm not saying that I don't have things in common, because with my department, I have to stay with them all day.
Yeah.
But when we go into the pub, I don't want to talk about what we've been talking about all day.
Yeah.
I kind of
even
enjoy it.
Yeah.
I don't even
do. I do like speaking to other people, because then you get to learn through them as well. So I'm not saying, okay, I must hang out with that, because sometimes I don't want to talk about that. Or I don't want to go there, and you know, I want to learn something else.
Yeah.
I don't know,
I find that.
Thank you.
I found there's somebody else. I found that. For example, recent, like this week, there was obviously this partner and it's like black woman and stuff, and I was like, yes, you know, it's gonna be done. Like, she's, you know, mentor me, blah blah blah. But it wasn't a natural, like, you know, you host another black woman and they're maybe a bit higher than you, just expect them to take them under your wing, to protect you, to shield you. But sometimes that's not how it's like, because it's a dog-eat-dog world. And so you just have to...
see you as a threat.
I don't think it's a threat.
They just don't want to.
But this is it. So sometimes, I've had to understand that, you know what? Sometimes you don't enter, like, some people just don't enter the workplace trying to be your friend, regardless of the race or that you are. And also, I think... race plays a part, but I think class is like one of the biggest things at work, because a lot of the times I'm not myself because they're talking about skiing in the south of France every December and, oh, it's going to be so different this year. And I'm like, I've never skied in my life. Like, I can't even ice skate properly. Every time I go there, I'll always walk around the barriers, you know what I mean? And so when that conversation happens, I've talked about this with my girls, when there's like a group of black girls and we're having our conversation about something black, I don't know what it is, could be love and hip hop or something crazy, and then a white person comes in, all of a sudden we'll stop talking about what we're talking about so that we can be more inclusive and so that they feel comfortable in our conversation. But when I've entered their conversation and they're talking about War and Peace and I haven't watched it and I'm there looking very blank face, they don't, or I have not seen them try and change the conversation so they can be inclusive. So this is the thing that I think a lot of companies don't understand. You can get so many black people in, but if they do not feel a part of the company, they're going to leave and they're just going to have so much dropouts, because to be diverse is to be able to be inclusive, and that mentality needs to go not just like higher up, it needs to be everybody in whatever company that you're working in. So that, yeah, that's what I think is quite...
We have some... Do you want to hold on? So we can do one more clip.
All right. Yeah,
can we do the next clip?
Second clip, please.
Kim, you call me Dean and you're hugging me, my man. How are you?
I'm good, how are you?
We're huggers.
Yes. My mom, this is Chris. Nice to meet you. Anyway, yeah, I'm going to see
you. Yes. Come on in. Please, welcome. So, how was your drive in?
It was fine. We actually hit a deer.
What?
Yeah.
Is it dead?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's horrible. Wow. Are you guys alright? Yeah, it just brought us out.
It did? It came out of nowhere. We got it pretty good.
Yeah, it must have frucked you out.
Fucking weird. Well, you know what I say? I say one down, a couple hundred thousand to go.
Yeah.
No, I don't mean to get on my high horse, but I'm telling you, I do not like the deer. I'm sick of it. They're taking over. They're like rats. They're destroying the ecosystem. I see a dead deer on the side of the road. I think to myself, that's a start.
I don't even understand that.
I'm just saying. You know what? I am grateful for what you've done today. I don't like...
We got that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, you guys look so... wiped out.
Yeah.
So how long has this been going on, this thing? How long?
4 months.
4 months?
Five months, actually.
She's right. I'm wrong.
Attaboy. Better get used to saying that.
Please, I'm so sorry.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. She's right. I'm wrong. See?
Do you have an off button? This is exhausting.
I know, and I want to give you a tour.
Can you, unpack first?
You want to unpack? Before the tour? This is Missy's office. She takes appointments in there.
She's a therapist, right?
A psychiatrist, yeah. Yeah, it turns out people up here are just as messed up in the head as they are in the city. This is Jeremy. That's Rose's little brother. Here he is.
I've heard stories.
Yeah, I bet you have. He's studying medicine now, wants to be just like his old man. You'll meet him.
All right, cool.
Pick these up in Bali. That's pretty eclectic. I'm a traveler, and I can't help it. I keep bringing souvenirs back. It's such a privilege to be able to experience another person's culture. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're gonna love this. My dad's claim to fame was beat by Jesse Owens in the qualifying round for the Berlin Olympics in 1936. Those are the ones where...
Owens won in front of Hitler.
Yeah, what a moment. What a moment. I mean, Hitler's up there with all his perfect Aryan race bullshit. This black dude comes along, proves him wrong in front of the entire world. Amazing.
Tough break for your dad, though.
Yeah. He almost got over it. That's the basement. We had to seal it up. Some black mold down there. My mother loved her kitchen, so we keep a piece of her in here. Georgina, this is Chris. This is Rose's boyfriend.
Hi.
Hello.
The garbage goes under the sink, and now for the pièce de résistance. The field of play. I love it. The nearest house is across the lake. It's total privacy. I know what you're thinking.
What?
Come on, I get it. White family, black servants. It's a total cliche.
I wasn't going to take you there.
Well, you didn't have to, believe me. No, we hired Georgina and Walter to help care for my parents. When they died, I couldn't bear to let them go. I mean, boy, I hate the way it looks.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
By the way, I would have voted for Obama for a third term if I could. Best president in my lifetime, hands down.
I agree.
Yeah.
Okay.
Liberalism.
I wanna flip the first question that we asked around, and just going on Ray's point where you're like, when white people having a conversation at work and then you join in and they don't change the conversation. I feel like if I walked up to a group of white people talking and then they change this conversation to something that they think that I would relate to, and then they start talking about Obama, I would be equally as offended as if they didn't. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I think that's what I was talking about though.
Well, I mean, that's what you're saying. I'm saying I'm flipping it around.
Yeah.
I'm flipping it
but
around.
But that's just ridiculous, because when, like, I don't know, white people join the conversation, I don't start talking about Stalin or, like, I don't know, somebody
what?
Who,
Stalin?
Like, I don't know, somebody like white who, I don't know, I don't start talking about Trump.
Okay, that was an example, for example. Okay, so when
but, like,
when
somebody that
when
is
your
like.
Friend, when your friends, when someone. Comes up to you and you're talking about.
Yeah, it will be like a seamless, see someone is uncomfortable, and like, not even uncomfortable, I'll see someone doesn't understand. So one, I'll be like, oh, so this is what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Da, 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 da. Mm-hmm. And then I'll be like, oh, I've never been. And then they'll start talking about it. But then because they know that I'm standing, it's just courtesy to me.
Okay,
it's let me not even.
Okay, you're talking about Love and Hip Hop.
Yeah.
A white person comes over.
I literally say we're talking about Love and Hip Hop.
And how do you explain it to them and say, and bring them into the conversation?
I will say, I'm talking about Love and Hip Hop. Mm-hmm. This, have you seen like these, TV dramas like Kim Kardashian, but with white people?
No.
It's not the same.
What I will say.
What if they say, have you seen The Real Housewives of Cheshire? And then you're like,
I'll be like, no, but have you seen The Real Housewives of Atlanta?
And they changed the whole conversation to that. That's what I'm saying. So like,
but it will be a more of a seamless change. I just don't understand. I don't think you guys know tact enough to be able to be like, so this is what
the Obama, that's me obviously taking it to its, stretching it.
Yeah, but that's an extreme that is just bizarre in my opinion.
No, not
because like, imagine that. That's a dumbass conversation.
Not really, because there's been times where, like, for example, this is so weird because I actually do this as well. I do it the other way around. So when I started working, at Penguin, there was a group of people, I was the only black guy there having conversation. And it's interesting that you said that, classes did different things, because there was a girl that she was telling me, I'm working class, blah, blah, blah.
And she then, told you that randomly?
Yeah, she started, not randomly, but we were having a conversation. And then she started talking about, Jay Haas and Stormzy and all this kind of stuff. And then I thought, okay, I started talking about the Smiths and Morrissey, do you know what I mean? Because I was trying to outdo her. Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of just like, at what point do we say these are the things that are common to all of us, but they're not distinct by race, do you understand? And it won't make for any kind of misinterpretation at all. What are those things?
I don't know, but what I think needs to be important is there needs to be that dialogue, so that if you see somebody does not know what you're talking about, mm-hmm. explain it to them, talk to them about it. A lot of the times, all you need is that inclusion. Oh, so what do you think about this? I'll say, oh, I don't know. Oh, okay, let me tell you. So it's very easy. Just people just don't know how to do it. It's very easy. It's a common thing. It's what you do around friendship. Okay. Like, we have a question right there.
Yeah, sure. Please.
Do we have a mic? Because just so that we can have it.
Oh, mic. Okay.
After Satya, we'll come to you.
So it's just basically around what you guys were saying. And I find it very interesting, the anxiety and the preoccupation with including white people and whiteness. And it's just a very funny conversation to hear. Like, if you gravitate towards other black people, why is there an anxiety about it? Why can you not be unapologetic about that and just go to where you see something in common? Why do you really, you know, care about what other white people, you know, do they care about that when they're going towards the people that they gravitate towards, you know? And it might be at your exclusion, you know? So I just feel like it's a bit of a, no shade, just a bit of a moot point. Why do you care?
But I think people care because, one, we are not a majority. So just because, as in, I totally agree what you're saying, but I think people care because you are noticed. One black woman amongst a field of white faces, where you go, you are seen. So I think the anxiety comes from you thinking, oh shit, would they think that I'm not being, you know, social enough because I'm only gravitating towards black people? You will still think it. Like, even though, for example, where I'm at, like, I have a really solid foundation of black girls who I literally hang around with every single day. I have no business hanging around with anybody else because I'm there to work and leave and hang out with my friends. However, we have had that conversation of, oh, do you think that maybe... And then it's like, yeah, but who cares, as you say. But that conversation, a lot of people have it, and a lot of times you feel it, and it's just... It's the confidence of getting to that stage of actually I can gravitate who I want, and a lot of people don't have that confidence, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. I think I just reached a stage within those environments where I just don't tend to care anymore because I've been so used to being the only one for a while, especially when there are other black people in those environments that don't necessarily, that aren't necessarily inviting or kind of accepting sort of thing. So you just become quite, like, not reclusive, but you just indifferent. You're there to do your job and go, sort of thing.
Anyway,
next question.
Wait, do I have to stand up? Or?
No, we can see you.
I think some of the things you're talking about a lot are in, like, more extreme example.
Yeah.
I think you said something about boys and ends. Mm. I think that means you have friends who wouldn't feel comfortable in certain things regardless of what you say. So I think there's like an obligation to make people feel comfortable with a head nod or a small wagwan or a spud. But in terms of, like, the previous scene for me is the scariest scene in the film because it's that awkward sort of line between funny and scary. Mm. Like, there's a bunch of people wanting to talk to you because they've seen the word diversity and all they want to do is remind you that you're black. Instead of talking to you about, like, you're wearing, you know, your camera, your dish, your that. And that's the point. It's not really about sort of picking topics that, like, I went to a train station and a white guy said hello to me and asked me if I listened to DEE. That's dead. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's about, like, how did you get here today? Do you know what I mean? Do you need help? What are you looking for? Those are the things we're talking about. I don't think it's about Stalin or what's a white topic and a black topic. That's a dangerous and it's a slippery slope. You're just going to offend everyone everywhere you go. The reason Get Out for me is a sick movie is because it's the perfect, like I said before, in between the funny and scary. It's like, how do you make people feel uncomfortable and sort of on the inside based on what you're saying? It's not just about an external thing, if that makes sense.
Sorry, yeah.
I don't talk
about it. Yeah, that's
fine.
And that's what kind of shakes you up about it as well.
Because you're
actually rattled.
Yeah.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, that is a very good point.
Do we have
clip three? Let's go with three.
Yeah, all right.
Can we play clip three, please?
Can we have clip three? Thank you.
Have you got the keys? I'm gonna put the bags in the trunk.
Okay, they are in here somewhere. It's just a matter of finding them. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Might take me a second. Hey,
Well, you can't find those keys.
No, I can never find them.
Let's do something more.
Yeah.
Get the keys.
Yo.
Yo, man.
How you going? The party's just getting started.
Just putting bags in the car, man.
Would anyone like tea?
No, I'm good. We leaving, actually.
Really? Why? Is something wrong?
Rose?
His dog got really sick, so he has to be at the vet first thing in the morning.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, how terrible.
Rose, the keys.
Looking.
Rose? What is your purpose, Chris? What? In life, what is your purpose? Right now, it's finding those keys. Fire. It's a reflection of our own mortality. We're born, we breathe, and we die. Rose?
I'm looking.
Even the sun will die someday. But we are divine. We are the gods trapped in cocoons. Rose.
I don't know where they are.
Rose! Rose! Rose, give me those keys! Rose, give me those keys. Rose, no! No, the keys! Oh, be careful, bro.
What the fuck?
I didn't do anything.
What the fuck is going on?
Where are those keys, Rose?
You know I can't give you the keys, right, babe?
First of all, this Rose Heifer.
Where them keys, I'm Rose?
Like, honestly, like when I watched this and I watched it the second time, I was like, the person who is actually the devil in this whole film is Rose. She's a really great actress though, because the whole time I was like, Rose is innocent.
Did anybody see it coming?
No.
No, I saw it coming when we saw the photos. Remember just before the scene, he's in the like the little cupboard and seeing the photos of all the people that she's entrapped with her, you know, devilism. And so when I saw that, that's when I was like, there's not something not right here with this one.
Yeah.
And
it's that switch, because she's got you all the way up until the end, until he's broken.
Where the keys, Rose?
To the point where he's completely broken.
Yeah.
Like, I can't give you them. And that's when they're
phenomenal.
I've got a question to ask, actually, regarding, like, you know, interracial relationships. And I just want to ask the audience, if anybody's ever been in one, have you ever felt trapped in the other person's culture? You ever felt like you couldn't actually be who you are in you know, in all of your cultural splendor and all that kind of thing? So I want to ask that question. If anyone wants to tell the truth, you know.
We've got someone there. Does anyone, do you know where the mic is?
Yes, Clarissa has the mic.
Okay, fantastic. Here, Clarissa,
just
guy in the white shirt.
Yeah, I don't
loud, I can't hear you.
You can feel entrapped, especially when you visit a country. And I was with a Filipino girl and I'm Colombian.
You just can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we're only doing this because of the recording. So fine. Just speak louder.
Speak louder.
I was with a Filipino girl and I'm Colombian, and I went back to her bits.
Yeah.
The Philippines. And we're very affectionate. Latin American people were very affectionate and were very, you know, hands on.
Yeah.
It was a total culture shock for me. Although we were both colonized by the same, you know, by the Spanish.
Yeah.
They're very reserved in that sense. There's no warmth when you know what I mean? So you can feel really put out of place. Mm.
Did you feel like that towards her? Or was it just her?
The family.
Her family,
towards
family,
yeah. It was a shock for me because I thought they'll be warmer.
Yeah.
It wasn't sense.
At that point, did you feel like perhaps
it wasn't just the family, it was it was just the culture. In general. It wasn't just the family, it was just the people in town.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was there, they used to call me like an Asting, which in their language meant like the cool foreigner.
Mm.
They used to, I don't know how to explain it, but it was like, I felt that maybe, I don't know, it could have been intimidation.
Mm.
Because they felt that they had nothing to speak to me about, nothing to relate with me.
But then at that point, did you ever feel like, should you, I guess, impose a little bit of your culture and get warmer towards them,
absolutely,
or just accept how they are?
No. That's I never shied away from who I am, what I believe, and who I was.
Mm.
And I think, as he was saying, when you go past that bit, you're able to relate with people on a different level. Because you're not looking for differences anymore. You're looking, as you said earlier, you're looking at what connects you as a human.
Yeah.
Because although we're all from different cultures, we all have the same experiences in life, ups and downs. And we relate to that.
Yeah.
Together. So it's like when you can meet people and you can focus on that, when you can speak about those things, there's no you're black, oh you're white, oh you're Asian, and it's hard to relate in that sense.
Mm.
Just like, I don't know.
I think the hardship comes from, I guess, other people's the ideas of you two as a union, because you can be so cool with someone on that level.
Yeah.
But I guess when you have families and cultures and people in town, and they're imposing all these ideals into your different cultures, that could be quite hard to deal with as a couple, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I'll agree to an extent.
Mm.
I mean, I get what you're saying, but the best way to put it for me was like, he was just saying, like, food as well. Like, when you're, like, for example, like, my ex-girlfriend, we're not there anymore, but my ex-girlfriend, she loves all our food and the dance and the culture and that side of it. So she talks to her family about what would intrigue her in that sense.
Mm.
You see what I mean? And vice versa. But that's because we were able to, like, push through that barrier of, oh, you're this and you're that.
Yeah.
No, we never saw it like that. We just pushed through straight.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
And it became you guys.
Yeah.
It became we.
What we were, yeah.
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 And then, yeah.
Cool.
Mm. Nice. Progression from there.
Cool.
Any other
thank
questions?
Thank you.
Should we just play the last clip?
Is there four?
Is there four
clips? Oh, is there four? I thought it was three.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
My bad, sorry. Any more questions?
Do you have any more questions?
Related to that, I do want to hear another perspective on that, actually, about feeling trapped in another person's culture when you've dated interracially.
And nobody want to share like that.
Nobody wants to be.
No. Maybe you can.
Nice intimate group, you know. You won't leave this room, don't worry. You can tell the truth.
What happens at the BFI? Oh, we got a question. We got something at the back.
What I was going to say, are you going to base about religion as well?
Yeah, that's part of it. It's all part of it.
Just quickly, because you're asking about interracial relationships, but what about, like, your own culture? Do you ever feel that you're being forced into your own culture? So, for instance, I'm from Nigeria, but I'm British born. My parents were from Nigeria. And sometimes, like, my cousins will tell you, I like to embrace certain parts of my culture, but not all of it.
Mm.
Because I believe in this thing called blended culture now. So in this day and age, you can have a blended culture. So I listen to all types of music. I don't limit myself. I like to try out new different cultures, etc. So when, like, my aunties and stuff see me, they're probably like, oh, why don't you do this? Like, you know, just a normal Nigerian girl. Or when you get married, you're going to do this. Mm. And I'm just like, no, I'm really not. And sometimes you can get trapped into your own culture, which is, and the product of that is trapping someone else into your culture, because you already are so trapped into your culture, you're forcing someone else to be trapped into your culture.
Yeah.
So I feel like sometimes it's not necessarily about interrelational relationships, but also your relationship with yourself and your own culture as well, because you don't want to be the person trapping someone else. So how do we stop that in terms of, I mean, I love my culture, don't get me wrong. I love it. I love being Nigerian. I love everything about it. But there's just certain things within the culture where I'm just like, yeah, you lot, I'm going to have to leave that at the door because I'm not with it.
I guess it's probably to do with how you've experienced your own culture, right? If there's parts of your culture that you've completely had a negative experience about, then you're going to shun those sides of you, I guess. I don't know. I feel like that's probably one aspect of it.
I mean, I think us being like Black British, you know, we have to accept, like, what you're saying is that there's a melting pot of cultures.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be open, you know what I mean? You can't be insular being Black British.
No.
You know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense, because you go to the ends, there's, you know, people, there's Bangladeshi, there's Pakistanis, there's Ghanaians, there's Nigerians, there's Irish, then, you know what I mean? There's English, and there's so many things, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, and you have to you do take from those certain things, do you know what I mean? Like, and you do is it even subconscious, do you know what I mean? Like, when I'm talking to someone and it's like, if they say something, I'll joke and say, oh, draw for the Copan, do you know what I mean? And it's like, where did I get that from, though? Yeah. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So little things like that, it just, you embrace and you take and you borrow and then you become Black British, do you understand what I mean?
I think that a lot of things with regards to like conflicts of identity arise from, I mean, I can only speak personally, but it's not even that you are inflicting yourself. It's more so like what your parents and your caregivers have told you to constrict yourself within. And as much as you don't want to be insular and there is like so many people around you, it can be very easy to be entrapped in one way of thinking, because that is what somebody has told you is the right way of living your life. And I think you can have so many different, like, the world is filled with different people, but how is it that we can only see one way and we have so much like conflicts with other people who are different to us and have differences? And so I think that, one, therapy girl, I do think that you need to look inside yourself and sit down and think, okay, what do I like about this particular culture and this particular way of living? What don't I like about it? And it is absolutely fine to pick and put to rest other things and make something unique to you that is healthy for you, because otherwise you're just going to kill yourself. Do you know what I mean? I think the bad thing about the diasporic identity is like you're treading these two like tectonic plates and you're in the middle and they're shifting and you feel like you're losing your way. But I think there's also beauty in that, only if you have the freedom. If you have the freedom to pick and choose, then it's amazing. But you need to find that freedom for yourself, because you can't allow people to tell you that this is the right way and you have to accept this way of life, the good, the bad, the ugly. No, I'm good with just the good.
Yeah.
Like, my ugly can come from somewhere else.
Yeah. I don't know about all that.
Yeah, you're trying to tell me that you can't create. If you have the freedom to, it's important for you to pick the good things.
I think a lot of the time...
It is for you to create that path.
What is so bad about that?
I don't know. I didn't say there's anything bad about it.
Why don't you agree with that?
I kind of think that when you take something that's good from a culture, conversely, I mean, the opposite end of that thing you've taken is good could end up being bad.
Sorry. Okay.
Any more questions?
No. We come to the end.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much for coming and listening to us again and again.
Make sure you subscribe, rate, review on iTunes and anywhere you find podcasts. We're on every Monday. And hit us up on social media.
And mostly, thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.